Hello. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, we're wishing you the best and hope that we are finding you happy and healthy on this day. Now, we bring you shows right here on Progressive Radio Network. If you go to prn.fm, then archives, then natural nurse, you will find a whole host of shows, very interesting topics, and you can listen to them anytime, day or night. It's always fascinating to me when I get calls and emails from either the website at naturalnurse.com, or you can sign up for a free newsletter there as well, and of course also Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And people are listening from all over the country and all over the world, not only to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, but all the progressive offerings right here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. So feel free to listen in live when we're here every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m., or anytime, 24/7, on the web at your convenience. Today we have as our guest Debbie Silver. Debbie is known as the Mojo Coach. She is president of Lifestyle Fitness and founder of www.themojocoach.com. She is a recognized health, weight loss, fitness, wellness, lifestyle, and self-improvement expert. Specifically, she is a registered dietitian with a master's degree in nutrition, a certified personal trainer, whole health coach, and has two certifications in pre- and postnatal fitness with specialty recognition in weight loss and weight maintenance. She is also a speaker, spokesperson, and an author of the book, A Pocket Full of Mojo, 365 Proven Strategies to Create Your Ultimate Body, Mind, Image, and Lifestyle, which was reviewed and recommended by Brian Tracy, Marshall Goldsmith, and many others. And also the Lifestyle Fitness Program, a six-part plan so every mom can look, feel, and live her best. So thank you so much for joining us today, Debbie.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Looking forward to it.
Now, I saw you lecture recently at a dinner event, which was a health event run by the Naval Expo.
Okay.
And you were a very inspirational speaker.
Thank you.
And there you shared with us a story about how you developed into someone so interested in staying well and healthy.
Well, you know, it started about, I'd say, 20 years ago. I was a dietitian and trainer, and clients were becoming very fit, thin. They were losing weight, looking great. Something was very wrong. I started getting very sick, first with symptoms, and then with illnesses, and then with conditions, and eventually disease. And things got so bad at one point that I couldn't even get out of bed. I couldn't raise my own kids. Here I had a husband and a home and four kids, and at the time, four dogs and this full-time practice. But I also had toxic relationships and way too much stress, and I was trying to be everything to everyone all the time. And I'm sure there are listeners out there right now who are shaking their head saying, yep, that's me. Anyway, so things got so bad that I had to give up my entire practice with clients that I loved. I mean, there was no way I could work. I could barely get through my day. And it hit me that it had to have something to do with my mindset and my lifestyle, because I was doing everything else right. I was eating well, and I was exercising. So that was the greatest gift, because it allowed me to see that it had to be something else. So I had surgery, and while I healed, I studied to become a whole health coach. And that's a health expert trained to teach how your lifestyle is either creating health or wellness or illness and disease. And sure enough, as I was going through that program, I learned that really on some level, the thoughts I was thinking and the stress I was under and the relationships I had were really at the root of it all. So I thought, well, what would happen if I changed those things? And I made this decision to do sort of a personal experiment, and I did, and I changed those things. And within, I'd say, 9 months to a year, I healed from everything, got my mojo back, started working with clients again. They got their mojo back, started calling me the Mojo Coach, and I said, well, this is way too good to keep to myself. And the first book flew out of me in less than 2 weeks, and a new business, brand, passion, and purpose was born.
Now, let me ask you something. When you said that you were, you already had a master's in nutrition and also an RD, which I actually think is a very powerful degree. I really advise people to go for that, even though in school you might not learn all about holism. There's many RDs that are very involved in really grounded holistic nutrition. And you said you were eating well. So how would you, what was your diet like then, and would you consider that well now? For instance, I know a lot of people who are into working out who look for everything that says low fat. But often those low-fat things and sugar-free things are loaded with toxic chemicals.
Absolutely. It's, you know, there are some, well, there are so many things I learned years ago about what really entails a healthy diet, which now it would almost be negligent if I taught the same thing that I had learned years ago. So, you know, we used to think that, low-fat and just high-carb was the way to go, and now we see there's so much inflammation and gut issues that are developing as a result of all that, and it shows itself in so many different forms. I mean, now we're becoming very aware of gluten-free, and so many people are realizing that they have, whether it's just, you know, a sensitivity or an intolerance or full-blown celiac disease. So we recognize that we're starting to see the changes that we need to have. In either case,
Debbie, I want to go back to that point.
Sure.
That was a very important point that someone who has your degrees and is knowledgeable knows, but a lot of mainstream people don't know because they're throwing around that word that I have celiac when really they don't. And that it's a wide spectrum disorder. Anything from someone, let's say, who's eating a muffin for breakfast and a sandwich for lunch and spaghetti at night, that's a lot of wheat, to someone who can't tolerate even a molecule. So why don't you describe that difference there?
Sure. Well, you know, so many people are intolerant. They have just an intolerance, and they don't even know. And what happens is when they continuously eat the foods that trigger this intolerance, they have an sort of an enzyme reaction where their own body starts attacking itself. And the other thing that happens when you're having gluten or carbohydrates is that you know we have these receptors in our brain that are triggered when we have these carbohydrates. These are the same receptors that are triggered when we have things like heroin and morphine. So they're igniting this part of us that is, you know, feels a sense of pleasure. So it's you know, it makes complete and total sense why we would keep eating like this. And, you know, David Kessler in the book, The End of Overeating, you know, he says how it's the combination of sugar, salt, and fat in all these processed foods that makes it, you know, it's almost that we don't even have to chew them. They go down so quickly. It helps create an addiction that makes it almost impossible to eat these foods in moderation. And for so many of us, these are the staples in our diets. So we think it's a question of that we don't have enough willpower, let's just say, and that's not it at all. We're eating foods that keep us addicted. And that's just sort of the physiological and mental emotional aspect of it. But there's so much more going on, because then we feel so discouraged and we're gaining weight like crazy because these foods just sort of stuff us and don't do anything to nourish or fuel us. And
well, you said a very important word, because you talk about the fact that this actually is physically addicting. And a lot of people might, let's say, look at somebody who's an alcoholic or a cigarette smoker and see they have an addiction,
right,
but not even realize that their struggle with being overweight is also linked to an addiction.
Oh, absolutely. And it's almost as if you tell a drug addict, or you tell someone, or even, let's say, someone who's a smoker, or you tell someone who's an alcoholic, you say, you know what, okay, let's do it like this. Just have one a day. And so what happens is they're continuously exposed, and they're continuously maintaining a mild version of that addiction. So, you know, in some instances, and in most areas that I work with my clients, I'll usually, you know, always suggest small gradual changes. When it comes to this sugar addiction that we just, I mean, as a nation, it's just epidemic. It's reached epidemic proportions. This is kind of something that it's best to go cold turkey. I've tried it every different way with my clients and with myself. And yes, the first few days it may be a little bit uncomfortable. You may not want to, you know, you may not be the sweetest person around. But if this is the way you go about it, and I help people through this all the time, you will feel such a greater sense of emotional balance. Your blood sugar level stays steadier throughout the day. You don't have this roller coaster ride of sugar-induced energy and emotions. So it's really one of those things that is so addictive. And unless many of us see this in, let's say, a celiac, or we're labeled gluten sensitive, we don't realize that we have this. But I would invite everyone to give it a shot, and you will see how much better you feel, how much better your body responds, and really how much easier it is to maintain your weight, your health, and your lifestyle going forward.
What would be the layout of a specific program? Because obviously it does involve not eating certain foods that a person might be used to, but I'm sure you have a game plan for replacements.
I do. And you know what? It's really in stages. So I'll start with someone, and I'll really start from where they are. And it's funny. They hang on to certain foods for dear life. And what I usually do, I don't just work on the food is one aspect of it, but I do a lot of work in mindset and lifestyle and even image, you know, how you show up physically, mentally, emotionally. And what I'll often do is really put a whole spin on the certain foods that they're truly addicted to, and those are the ones that they don't want to give up. And it's usually a handful of foods that own them, and they've completely given their power away to these handful of foods. And they look at it as, well, I'll be so deprived if I don't have this. And I look at it and say, well, you've spent 10, 20, 30 years, you've spent decades not living in a body you're proud of, not having the energy you need to get through your day, not having the confidence you need to pursue a new opportunity or a new relationship that you really want. That's deprivation, and it's only because of a handful of foods.
Right, so you reconfigure their focus.
Oh, absolutely. And so often I'll also go about it in a very odd way. Something like I work with a lot of emotional eaters, and here's where we're eating just to soothe, calm, numb, relax from our problems or our pain. And food is simply the drug of choice. And what this is really is, you know, we're eating to feed an unmet need. So, you know, I kind of go about it by asking them, what are they truly hungry for? It's not the food. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's a feeling or sense of fulfillment. Maybe it's to reconnect with a partner. So we get to what, you know, really is the need. And then we go about a step-by-step game plan to fill that need. Once that need is fulfilled, the weight just drops off because now they're feeding what they're truly hungry for.
So let's say you had somebody come in. How mm-hmm. would you begin that? Or either think of a client that you have worked mm-hmm. with actually, or sometimes, you know, you've seen a kind of client mm-hmm. over and over again. Like, let's say a 50-year-old menopausal woman, I would
sure.
say, is probably a big person, that a big group of people that you mm-hmm. have interacted with. Or perhaps younger mothers, because mm-hmm. you yourself are unbelievable, a mother of four. So some of the challenges of a younger person.
Mm-hmm. It's so different for each. I'd love to say there's truly one type of person. They're all so different. And they have such different needs. I'll work with, let's just take, you know, that young mother, for example. She is so typically overwhelmed with this new role she has been thrust into. And what happens is everyone is bombarding her with what has worked or what didn't work for them. And because she's new to this role, she doesn't trust herself. And she just assumes, well, they must know better than I do. So she sets the bar so high based on someone else's success and what worked for them, and then always feels badly because she doesn't find herself, let's say, measuring up. And that's just one aspect of it. You know, the other piece is because she's in this role, and we're typically conditioned to put ourselves last and take care of everyone else, and only if and when there's any time left, that's when we'll take care of ourselves. And by that point, there's no time, energy, or motivation left. So what happens is she finds herself unfit, overweight, overwhelmed, unsatisfied, unhappy. And that's impacting now how she is with her kids. That's impacting how she is with her partner. It impacts everything. And she's the greatest role model her children have. They're watching everything. And so she's not now being the role model that she so wants to be. So the idea, see, that's where I would say, okay, well, what are the steps that we can take right now to at least give you the incentive to just make healthy changes that you can be proud of, that you can work from, that you can use as sort of a launching pad to take on, you know, the next challenge. And the confidence is slowly being built, and she makes these changes, starts feeling better, and is ready to do more.
So what would be specifically some of those steps that you might advise her to take?
It could be something as simple as get the sweatpants off, get dressed every day, and take a few minutes for your own self-care. Because the way you feel will radiate to those around you. If you're not taking care of yourself, it's a sign of a lack of self-love. Take those few minutes to just put yourself in a better place physically, mentally, and you know, you'll be better for it. You're going to act differently. You're going to sound differently. And you may make, just because of that, you may make some better food choices throughout the day. You may drink a little bit more water. You may be more inclined to take care of your body because you've taken a little, you've shown yourself a little bit of that self-care. It may be something like that. Very often, if a client comes to me, I may just suggest, well, it could be something like food, and then it could be, okay, well, you know what? What can we do to eliminate these, let's say, snack foods that you're eating throughout the day? Obviously, you're either, you know, you're not eating a satisfying meal beforehand, or you're eating just to, you know, out of emotional, you're eating emotionally or binge or mindless eating. What can we do with that? And even that change can make such a difference because she'll see the results immediately. It could be something as simple as, what are you going to do to nourish yourself? You know, you are taking care of everybody else, and here's where they feel so guilty if they take the time, let's say, to work out or something. And again, I'll just completely spin it around, and I'll say, and that's the benefit of working with moms, because then I just say, okay, well, let's say you have your own daughter who comes to you saying, well, Mom, I don't have time to work out or take care of myself. What would you say? You'd say, of course, take care of yourself, because the better you are, the better you'll be for all within your care and reach. So a lot of times it's just, again, it's a mental shift. So it would be that type of work that I would do with a mom. I work very often with people in transition, going from, let's say, working in a corporate environment to working as an entrepreneur, or going back to work after raising their kids, or in any type of
transition. Is that something that you personally experienced?
Oh, absolutely.
So you were working more in a corporate environment, and then you moved into your own.
No. I was never really in corporate, but transition, certainly. I mean, we're always in some type of transition. But very often I will work with people in corporate, going from corporate to becoming an entrepreneur. I found, personally, that's an entirely different language. That, you know, just the corporate talk and the entrepreneurial talk, completely different world, completely different language. Or I work with a lot of women who, let's say, their partner lost their job, and they need to go back to work and earn an income where they had to in the past, or their kids are grown and they're unfulfilled and they want to do something. So it's getting, they've been out of the workforce for a while, or they haven't been in that place for a while. So how do they get to that place? How do they become more confident so they can just approach that in a better way? I work with a lot of women who are also divorced or bouncing back from cancer, or something else where they really were sort of, you know, hit hard for a long time. How do you slowly recover from that? And that could be, you know, one story comes to mind where I was working with, I got a call once from a woman, and she had heard about me, and she had this horrible bout with breast cancer, and she used to be a runner. And she just wanted to just kind of get back in the game. And she called me up, and I went to her house. She had three young children, one of them, and I had never heard of anything like this, but because of her illness, the time that she was going through all of her treatments and everything that she was going through, he lost his ability to walk. I think they called it like hysterical paralysis or something like that. And they would just pick him up and move him around. And I remember she said, you know, I really want to feel strong again. So we started walking with just a walking program, and she was just exhausted after a minute or two. And then every once in a while, she'd feel a little bit stronger. I throw in like a sprint. And then eventually the walks got shorter and the runs got longer, and she was feeling really strong. And it's always about challenging ourselves and seeing what we can do, because we can do so much. So one day I just sort of threw it at her and I said, well, you know, I think you're ready for the next challenge. She said, well, what's that? You know, there's a 5K race coming up. How about if you...
That's a lot less than she was doing before.
What's that?
At her peak, she was doing more than 5K.
Oh, yeah. But compared to where she had been, this was a full-blown marathon. So she was like, oh, my gosh, I don't know. It seems so hard. I said, you know, and then here I just threw it at, you know, you're saying something. As the words are coming out, you're saying, what am I doing? But I said to her, I said, here's what we'll do. You promise to finish, and I'll promise to win. And the minute those words came out, I said, now what do you do, big shot? So we both entered the race, and I'll never forget that day. And the beauty was, you know, ignorance is bliss. I had never run in a race before. I had no sense of timing or anything like that. All I knew was I made a promise, and then I purposely told everyone I knew so I wouldn't back out. In the meantime, I had her make up a shirt that had her family, the three kids and her husband, close to her heart on the front, and purposely nothing on the back, on her back, like cancer wasn't on her back anymore. So we see each other before the race, and we give each other this huge hug, and we say we'll see each other at the finish line. So the gun goes off, and I ran as fast, like someone was chasing me, like I was on fire. And turns out I made it. I was third overall, but first for my age group. And now, so my husband greets me, and I only had two kids at the time. And we're waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm just waiting to see her, and I don't see her. And I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and now I'm starting to get really worried. And I'm waiting, and I'm waiting. And now the kids are, you know, they want to go, and I just was so committed, I just didn't want to leave. And finally, I sort of resigned myself. I said, well, I guess she just couldn't do it, and I pushed her too hard, and I'm going through everything I had said and feeling so terrible. And when we were getting ready to leave, all of a sudden, I just see the most beautiful sight I had ever seen. I see her crossing the finish line, and more importantly, I see her family. And as she crosses the finish line, I see her son. Oh, every time I tell this story, I see the son who wasn't even able to walk run up and hug his mom.
Oh, how old is he? I mean, he was just a little boy.
He was 8 years old.
And he couldn't walk?
He couldn't. He called it like hysterical paralysis or whatever it was.
Oh, he still couldn't, yeah.
I will never forget that sight as long as I live. And it showed me really what commitment means. And it's amazing what we're able to do when that commitment is so strong. It showed me there's no way I would have come in third overall if I didn't commit. And I don't know if she would have finished if she didn't commit. And I don't know if the son would have done that if he didn't commit. So, you know, commitment is just an incredible, incredible motivator.
And did you win?
I came in third overall and first for my age. Yeah, so it was wonderful. And so anyway, there are all different types of clients, and very often now, and this is going back to
Wait. I'm going to stop you right here for 1 minute, Debbie, because we're going to just take a little break right here to listen to the Natural Medicine Chest, one of our informational pieces for our audience. And when we come back, we are going to continue our discussion. We're here today with Debbie Silver, and she is the Mojo Coach. You can find her at themojocoach.com. And obviously, she knows a lot about health and fitness, and we will be back to discuss more with her right after the Natural Medicine Chest.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stone. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
Okay. How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
Welcome back once again to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on PRN.FM, Progressive Radio Network, and thank you so much for joining us. You can always get in touch with us, tell us what you want to hear about, and other comments that you'd like to share at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. While you're there, check the schedule. We have a wide array of on-ground meetings that you can attend, including herb walks, medicine-making workshops, holistic health presentations. We also have an educational course which grants you a certification in topics such as herbal medicine, homeopathy, and energy medicine. Just look under energy. Or come with us on one of our trips. We have Echo Tours to Cures, and several are occurring in March, where we go to the island of Jamaica and actually live with shamans for about 4 or 5 days, and you study ancient cultures, and if you like, you can actually get 3 college credits for that course that are being offered through Stony Brook University, a major university, and of course would probably be accepted by any university you're going to if you wanted to add in those credits. So that's happening in March. Just check out the Jamaica trip at naturalnurse.com or join us right in Manhattan when we have Echo Tours to Cures locally to Chinatown and other really interesting traditional areas that are available locally, such as Ayurvedic interventions, ancient Indian medicine. Today we have as our guest Debbie Silber, MSRD, WHC, the Mojo Coach. And Debbie has been working for years at allowing people to increase their level of fitness, wellness, lifestyle, and self-improvement. So thank you so much for joining us today, Debbie.
No, thank you so much for having me.
That was a very interesting story that you shared about the mother with the slightly disabled child. Let's hope he's all better by now. That actually both of their overall levels of wellness were lifted by the suggestions that you made and the coaching that you did with them. Now, we heard in the Natural Medicine Chest, I thought an interesting piece of information about how acupuncture can actually be used to balance brain chemistry. And I know a lot of what you're doing is looking at that, doing that through exercise, through changing mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And how important is what our focus is on our lifestyle?
Oh, our focus is everything. And I think, unfortunately, for so many of us, I mean, we're doing the best we can, but it takes an illness, a crisis, a tragedy, or a trauma to shake us up and have us question, really, how are we living? And are we really making the impact that we want? And I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful not to have those tragedies in order for us to sort of wake up and shake us up and make those changes? But so often, you know, and you mentioned chemical things going on and all kinds of things like that, but there are so many internal and external stresses that are impacting our health. And it's actually one of the reasons why I'm just finishing up a certification to do functional diagnostic nutrition, because so many of my clients, and this was the case with me as well, have things like adrenal fatigue. And we think that we don't know why we're so exhausted and so depleted, and we get sick so often, and we're losing, you know, our hair or our skin, our nails are all being impacted, or even something like digestive issues and thyroid and all of it. And I realized that when my first crash and burn happened, that was actually it, and it's so largely due to, let's say, external stressors, which would be mental, emotional, or internal stressors, like anything from trauma or a parasite or a bacterial or a viral infection or something like that. So why not just find out exactly what it is and then just heal from the root instead of just treating the symptoms?
So that's the ancient naturopathic focus of find the cause instead of just cover the symptoms.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's what we do. I think in our effort just to get well or stay well, we'll go from doctor to doctor or guru to guru and say, help me, fix me, heal me. And one thing I do personally with my clients is I hand that power right back. You know, I tell them, you know, if you're with someone for an extended period of time and you've given them all of your power, you're not empowered. The idea is get all the tools, the resources, the information you need so you can become your personal professional best. You can heal from the roots and do this on your own. And they're sort of surprised and a little taken back, like, what do you mean? Don't you want to work with me for a long period of time? And I tell them, if I am, I'm not doing my job effectively.
Well, in a way, but I know people who do see personal trainers just to, mm-hmm. in that aspect, you know, to help them work out and stay on focus and be doing the exercise correctly. So sometimes that is a long-term relationship.
That's true. And I've seen people 3 times a week for 10 years. What I'm really talking about is, if for personal training, let's just say, but what I'm really talking about is that sense of they don't know, someone else must know better than them, and let me just hand over all my power to that person and have them heal me and fix me.
Yes, that's a very good point. Now, weight loss, of course, is such a big struggle, I think, for really so many people. Mm. What do you see as some of the greatest reasons why people struggle so much in terms of weight? And is there ever a time where you should go, you know what, I've gained weight. It was 20 years ago that I was thin. Let me buy bigger clothes and be happy. Mm.
You know, and this is going to sound a little bit odd, but I have worked with hundreds and hundreds of people over the last, you know, 21 plus years, and I found that, of course, there are some of the other issues, and we can address those too, but sometimes we sort of subconsciously sabotage ourselves, and if I haven't seen this enough times, then, you know, I would think it's crazy too. And what happens is, let's say, like, here's an example. I remember seeing someone once, and she said, Deb, I've been losing the same 30 pounds for 30 years. Now, already I know.
That's exactly what I mean, right?
Yeah. And so I know it's not a food thing. There's something else going on there. So we start seeing each other for a while. And you know, I don't just work on the food aspect. So that's a way, let's say, to bring someone in and you know, get them comfortable. Because it's easier to say, pack a healthy lunch than ditch your husband. So we start where we start from a place of comfort. So we start talking about food, and then eventually I get the sense, it's not food. And we hit on the idea that her husband, when she starts losing weight, she starts feeling confident. She starts feeling sexy. And what happens is he starts feeling threatened, jealous, and insecure. So what she does, so as not to rock the boat, she subconsciously sabotages her weight loss so he's comfortable. So with that, I said, well, you know what? You're really, truly wasting your time with me until we make decisions, you know, until you make some decisions about where, you know, your relationship, and are you still willing to do that? Because, of course, I can tell you what to eat, but that's not, you've had that for 30 years. That's not the issue. So she says, okay, you're right. Well, sure enough, a year later, I get a phone call, Deb, I'm ready. And week after week, she's steadily losing, and it's falling off of her. Well, she had taken that year really to evaluate her relationship and make that decision, am I willing to keep the weight on just so he's secure, you know, and came to some decisions. And obviously from her success, She kind of figured those things out. So it's not just a question of food. So that would just be one reason why someone keeps the weight on. It serves as protection. You know, when we're young and we're afraid, we hide behind our mom's leg, let's say, for safety and security. Well, as we get a little bit older, that weight provides the same sort of protection. You know, it keeps us, we kind of know what's expected of us, or just, you know, how people may look at us or whatever it is at a certain weight and a certain place. And, you know, what's going to happen if all of a sudden you have more confidence, you have more energy, you look better, you're sexier, you look different. How is that going to impact your life, your lifestyle? And because of the unknown, a lot of people just stay where they are just for that reason. And even if the place where they are stinks, it's what's familiar and comfortable, so they stay there. So that could be another reason why someone stays where they are. And we haven't even touched the food choices. Those are just some other things that I've seen.
That's very interesting what you shared, though, the fact that this woman thinks she wanted to lose weight, but there were other sort of emotional strings, hidden strings, mm-hmm. to the reaction of her husband in that particular case.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that one of the things that hold people back from making changes they're unhappy with is many of these underlying and perhaps unknown, like you shared that it took her over a year to make the decision, mm-hmm. with that new knowledge that she was ready to really move ahead?
It really is. That emotional piece has so much to do with it. And even it's a mindset and it's a conditioning piece. So there are so many women I've worked with over the years who said, well, this is just who I am. This is just everyone in my family, you know, has big thighs. Everyone in my family is overweight. Everyone in my family gets heart disease. And what we do is we live into this sort of image we've created for ourselves. So there's really nothing that's going to change if that's what you believe. We hang on to that story. And then I'll go through this with them, and I say it sometimes during my talks because it's such a way to sort of shock you into, oh, wow, that was just a story I was hanging on to and a belief that just doesn't serve me. And really, a belief is no more than the repetition of an idea from someone you trust. That's it. Someone said something to you enough times, it made sense, you took it on as your own. So I say to them, well, you know, let me ask you something. Have you ever believed in, I don't know, the Tooth Fairy or the Easter Bunny or Santa Claus? And they all start laughing. They say, well, you know, at some point, when you were young, no one could talk you out of it. That made total and complete sense to you. And at some point, you kind of questioned it. And you said, well, is there really a little lady flying around? And it didn't make sense. And then when it really didn't make sense, you shed that belief. So I invite them to question everything that they, you know, that they believe, and question everything that I'm telling them as well. And if the idea doesn't serve them and doesn't inspire them towards really creating the changes that they want, let that belief go. Because chances are someone put it in their head, they took it on as their own, and they've been living within those limits, and they don't have to.
Yes, and it's very broad broad strokes, because many people have these issues. I would say almost everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you work with a client discovering what some of these underlying issues were? Like you talked about that one woman in terms of her weight loss might mm-hmm. be a threat to her relationship.
Sure. It's, you know, it really depends. And I have products and programs really for every need and budget. Now, one of my most successful programs is there's an online and an offline version in Long Island, New York. And this is a 5-week group coaching program. It's really the best of everything that's ever worked since I've been doing this, packed into just 5 weeks. They get a curriculum, and every week we talk about just the most significant topics that I've come across, you know, in my years of doing this. So that's one way that I love working with clients, because not only are they getting the best of my coaching, but they're getting the benefit of other people. They're getting the support from a small group as well. They're getting, you know, and they're getting the other people's questions, which very often is something that may be their concern as well, but they just weren't realizing, they weren't aware of. So that's one way I'll work with them. The other way is, like I said, through the private coaching and membership programs, everything in between. But it all depends. If it is a private coaching situation, then it all depends on where they are. Is it a weight loss issue? Is it a health issue? Is it a bouncing back from an illness or divorce? Is it, you know, a transition, making a transition from one stage of life to another? Is it a corporate wellness solution? It's really where they are and how can I serve their needs best. And then I'll just pick and choose whichever sort of credentials I need at the time to give them what they need to get their job done.
Well, that's excellent. So we're going to take another little break right here to let Progressive Radio Network tell you listeners all about many of the excellent shows that you can hear right here on Progressive Radio Network. And then when we come back, we will continue our discussion about how stress creates aging, weight gain, illness, and disease, and what you can do to prevent it, with information from Debbie Silver, the Mojo Coach. We'll be right back with more. Welcome back to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. You can find us at www.naturalnurse.com or at naturesanswer.com. And at naturalnurse.com, you can find education, schedules of where we are, actually in the flesh, myself and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone. And the many books that we've written, click on books, such as Arthritis, The Alternative Medicine Guide, Weight Loss, The Alternative Medicine Guide, which is a lot of what we're talking about right here today with our guest, Debbie Silver, and lots of other information. So today we are talking with Debbie Silver, MSRDWHC, who is known as the Mojo Coach. She is the president of Lifestyle Fitness and founder of www.themojocoach.com, and is a recognized health, weight loss, fitness, wellness, lifestyle, and self-improvement expert. Now, tell us about some of the challenges, let's say, of you being a mother of four children and doing all this work.
Well, you know, the greatest thing is, my clients see firsthand that I'm always authentic. I'm just doing the best I can. It's not easy. I have four kids, five dogs, a husband, a home, a full-time business. I guess, you know, the one thing that kind of makes it all work is I really do not strive for, you know, the whole supermom thing. That's I'm sure which was one of the things that led to my first crash and burn, and it was just trying to do everything and do it all well. I think everybody realizes I'm doing the best I can. So let's say, for example, I want to, you know, cook for my family. Well, I'll make anything if it has five ingredients or less. So there are certain rules that I have just to make things simpler. And I just really do the best I can. There's a lot, and I love what I do, so I have a tendency to take on way more than I should. I know how to say no. It's something I teach my clients all the time, but some of these opportunities are just so wonderful, and I just want to take them on. So it's this constant, I wouldn't say balance. I don't believe in balance. I think balance is really a scary word because we think we can do everything well all the time. I kind of think it's more of like a triage where, you know, if you go to, let's say, into the hospital, they'll take care of the most important case first. So I sort of handle things that way. So if I'm working, I try to be 100% in work mode. And because of that, I feel good about it. And then when I'm with my kids, I try, not always successfully, to be 100% in mom mode. And sort of strive for, you know, if we can call that a balance, that's what I go for instead.
And so moving towards balance and sort of not over expecting yourself to be perfect in every one of those multiple areas.
Oh, absolutely. Because then what happens is we just are always disappointed by what we didn't do. I'd rather be impressed by what I did do. It'll make me feel better. It'll give me incentive to try even more the next day. And I think so often we're so conditioned not to give ourselves credit for anything. You know, we think rewards are just for kids. No, they're not. You know, it's if you've worked hard at something, if you did something well, celebrate it. And I encourage that with my clients all the time. You know, so often they may have friends who maybe they're jealous or threatened or intimidated by their success. You know, they're, of course, their body's changing, but with so, you know, with those changes comes a whole new attitude and a whole new, sometimes just a purpose is revealed. I mean, it's been incredible. And they know that very often they may have, they don't want to come across, let's say, as showing off or whatever it is. So I really encourage them to tell me. And I tell them, you know, text me, call me, email me, let me know about these successes, because that's the validation, that's the acknowledgement and the recognition that you deserve. And let me do that for you.
So now what about, how does stress create some of these problems like aging, weight gain, illness, and disease?
Yeah, stress creates aging, weight gain, illness, and disease. In other words, stress makes us sick, fat, tired, old, and ugly. That's usually how I get people's attention. And this was the case with me with this whole adrenal fatigue. You know, it was because of this unmanaged chronic stress. Our bodies are so magnificently designed. They're designed to get us out of an acutely stressful situation. For example, if a car is coming at us, it's this incredible stress response that is ignited, and because of it, we're able to quickly jump the curb to safety. Our, you know, heart, blood and oxygen go to the heart and lungs, our pupils dilate, everything we need just to get us to the curb to safety. What happens in chronic unmanaged stress is this same system is ignited, but it's not turned off. So the same system that is saving you over the short term is actually killing you over the long term. And your body doesn't know or doesn't really care if the stress you feel is real or imagined. So it's going to respond whether there's a car coming at you, you know, whether you're reacting to a fight you had with your partner, whether you're sitting, you know, dealing with road rage, whatever it is. If your body thinks it's you know, being attacked, it's going to respond. And this response is going to deplete you physically, mentally, emotionally, and cause a tremendous amount of wear and tear. And here's an example just to show you how amazing our body is. You know, I'm sure that there's been one time or another where everybody listening has kind of scarfed down lunch. You've eaten quickly because you have to quickly get back to your desk or get on quickly to the next task. And you'll, you know, if you think about it, you'll remember feeling that sort of really gassy, bloated feeling and really uncomfortable. And you may think it was just, well, I ate quickly, that's just what happened. When you did that, you told your body that it's being attacked. You told your body it's under a tremendous amount of stress. So it's almost as if your body says, you know, wow, we have bigger fish to fry here. We can't bother with digestion. We need to save you. So all of the blood and oxygen that really could be used to digest your meal is diverted to save you. You know, and that's just one example. So think about throughout your day when you're walking around feeling constant stress, how that's depleting you just physically, mentally, and emotionally.
And that certainly does take its toll over time. Now, what can someone do to step back and realize that it is stress? Because like you said, it's not like they're having something that can be really seen like a really emergency situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first thing is, and what I always suggest to people that I see, is understand how your body reacts to stress. So the first step would be, okay, well, when you're in a stressful situation, do you find that you're grinding your teeth? Do you find that you get a headache? Are your muscles tightening? Do you have a digestive issue? You know, how is your body acknowledging stress? And then this way, when you have those symptoms, which you really shouldn't be having, when you have those symptoms, instead of just taking something to reduce the symptoms, that's when you say, well, I know this is how my body's telling me I'm under stress. Now, what are some things I can do to deal with the actual problem? And, you know, and we don't do this during the time of stress. This is the work that you do before. So you come up with all of these strategies. And I have had clients who've come up with amazing strategies of what really truly works for them. And it's so individual. You know, somebody could take a walk in nature or take a shower or call a friend. And, you know, I had a client who would love to clean. She called me up one day. She said, Deb, I'm making everybody crazy. I'm stressed and I'm cleaning. And I said, well, the problem really is only, you know, you just need to go to other people's houses and clean for them when you're stressed. So it's finding what works for you. I've had clients who they love the idea of going to a bookstore or a library, you know, and anything in between, exercising, doing something therapeutic for your hands, like knitting, crocheting. The idea is find what works for you and have that plan ahead of time. So when stress hits, when you see, when you're feeling that stress response, that you know is your body's way of telling you that it's feeling stress, whether that's that muscle pain or headache or whatever, implement that strategy. And that's just, you know, one thing you can do.
So you have to learn to actually step back and be the watcher so that you're not so inside the effects of the stress while it's happening.
Well, that's it. You know, we can't change anything we're not aware of. So one of the biggest things I do in any type of coaching that I offer is create awareness and really just, you know, shake you up so you realize, well, that's why you've been, you know, acting or reacting or behaving the way you have been. You know, and with that awareness, now you're in a wonderful position to make that decision. Do I want to do something about it? You know, so often we can become aware of something, and then it's scary because now we say, okay, now I'm responsible. Now I see this is what I'm doing. You know, I don't know if I want to do anything about this. I don't know if I'm ready to do anything about this. But if you are ready, you can't change it if you're not aware of it. So I have everybody become very aware of what they're doing and why, and then make that decision. What do you want to do about it now?
And I like your idea of having a replacement strategy there already. You know, I've even had people do things like have a rubber band around their wrist.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're doing a behavior, whether it's worrying too much or reaching for that third muffin or whatever it is, they actually use the rubber band to remind themselves about what they want to do.
And you know what? I have customized reminder bands. And so this way they know I'm with them at all times, and all of my clients have them. And it's a great tool exactly for that reason and to create that awareness. And I tell them, snap that band. It's certainly not to hurt you. It's so you recognize you're sort of wired to do something a certain way. And the more you snap that band, the more you realize how you're wired, and you have an opportunity to rewire yourself.
Well, thank you so much for all that excellent information, Debbie. And you were really an inspirational speaker. You're in fabulous shape.
Oh, thank you.
Really done all the things that you teach other people to do. So you're coming at it from a firsthand and also very knowledgeable approach. So thank you so much for being our guest today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners. Get in touch anytime at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.